Happy New Year, everyone. Happy Monday. Happy January the 3rd. I hope you all had a very safe, happy, and fun, festive, or relaxing low-key New Year into ushering you into the 2022 year, which is very exciting. New time, new era, clean slate for most. I had a wonderful New Year's. It was a very low-key evening for me personally. For two reasons, it was my dog's fourth birthday, which was very exciting. Well, December the 31st was my dog's birthday, so I spent all day with him. But also, Warner Brothers and HBO Max graced us all with the gift of Harry Potter 20th anniversary Return to Hogwarts, which I just played for you, the opening. The music in this, by the way, was gorgeous. It was an hour and 43 minutes of nostalgia for us Harry Potter stands around the world. Millions and millions and millions of us who got to revisit Hogwarts through the eyes of Emma Watson, Daniel Radcliffe, Rupert Grint, Helena Bonham Carter, Bonnie Wright, Ivana Lynch, and many, Tom Felton, and many others. Noticeably absent, of course, was J.K. Rowling herself, but we'll get into that very soon. But I just want to say the music was chilling, and that, of course, was the train. They literally, the cast was taking the Hogwarts Express from platform 9 3/4 back to the school, which was amazing and just super, super nostalgic, and it brought me back to being in being a 12-year-old kid in sixth grade, so I'm really, really, I loved it. But anyways, I have four great stories for you guys to start us off on this Monday, episode 4 of season 6 of The Mistress of Pop Culture. Hi, everybody, I'm Andrew DeVitri. I am so glad to be doing this. I love doing this, and it feels really weird to be doing this because this is my first episode of the new year, and it's just wild. I had a good weekend. It's so cold here in LA, and I spent the last month in Florida with a fam, and it's so hot there. I mean, I'm from Boston, but my family, my parents go to Florida because it's much warmer there than it is in Boston. And it was like sunny and 80 every day, and here it's 50 and sunny, but it's cool, you know, and it's chilling. And I have my heat on right now, so if you hear a little bit of a, you know, rumbling in the background, excuse me, it's my heater, which is really wild, but I'm going to turn the AC on because it's too cold for that shit, honey. But aside from that, I don't have much else to discuss other than the fact that, oh, I watched the Sex Lives of College Girls. The first season, 10 episodes on HBO Max. HBO Max is really killing it with their content. I mean, obviously, and just like that. Now, Sex Lives and then Harry Potter and then all the movies, Sex and the City, everything. It's just the best. And I loved it. I love the four girls. Bella, Leighton, Timothy Chalamet's sister, and then the soccer player who is too gorgeous for words. And I love the supporting cast, and it's great. It's a great show, and I highly suggest if anybody wants a fun. It's not graphic at all, too. It's just, I mean, there's some nudity, and they go to, like, a naked party, which is like, whoa, my eyes. But yeah, it was very interesting. Oh, and I also said in my last episode last week on Friday when I talked about the late, great Betty White, may she rest in peace, I was going to sort of recap episode 5 of And Just Like That. All I have to say about it is Samantha Jones was referenced twice. When Carrie had her hip surgery, she was, like, high on opioids, which, like, isn't funny, but, like, obviously it was a commentary on what's going on in the world. And she brought up, you know, Carrie does a podcast with Che Diaz. And she talks about her friend Samantha Jones and how in season 1 or 2, Samantha pulls the diaphragm out of her, which true fans know what episode that was. Also, what was really interesting, there was a moment, the first 4 episodes have sort of been teasing us with maybe Miranda is exploring her sexuality and whatnot, but that came to fruition this episode. And Che Diaz, played by Sara Ramirez, comes to Carrie's apartment to bring her some liquor and a podcast mic because she's working from home. And Miranda obviously gets really excited. They have a few drinks together. Che's hands go somewhere south and Miranda's finger, and they're very loud, and they basically have, you know, they do their thing in the kitchen and they're very loud, and Carrie hears it. But also Carrie, Sarah Jessica Parker, is woken up because they're smoking a joint, and I kind of can't shake what I watched because it was very, 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 very graphic and loud, and it was a lot. So, but, you know, that's pretty much what Sex and the City was about. I mean, it's how Kim Cattrall was basically carrying the show on her back, because Kim was really Samantha was the open, sexual, expressive woman of that show, and that's why I think she was a fan favorite, and she had no shame or she had no apologies for just being so fabulous about it all. But, yeah. I left the vent on in my shower, my bad. Anyways, let's yeah, so that's pretty much what I wanted to talk about. It was a lot, but you know, switching subjects now. First two stories have to do with the Harry Potter 20th anniversary, which was just something special. So our first article is the 12 biggest revelations from Harry Potter reunion special. This is from People Magazine. HBO Max's Harry Potter reunion special will take you on a magical journey, and that it certainly did. In honor of the film's 20th anniversary, stars Daniel Radcliffe, Emma Watson, Rupert Grint, and many more reunited to discuss the iconic franchise that started many of their careers. In addition to taking us back to Hogwarts by recreating some of the sets, the cast members also discuss some interesting tidbits about the movies, including details about casting, filming, and even on-set crushes. Oh yes, the Emma Watson, Tom Felton of it all, Hermione Granger, Draco Malfoy of it all. I couldn't even handle it. While some fun facts are well more known than others, even the most ardent Harry Potter fans will likely learn something new from the special. Read ahead for the most interesting blah, blah, blah. Okay, the first piece is, director Chris Columbus was skeptical about reading the Harry Potter books at first. Chris Columbus obviously directed the first two Harry Potters, The Sorcerer's Stone and The Chamber of Secrets, which, by the way, I think he was a great choice for the first two films because they're very magical. They're more geared towards children, and I think that's great because as the films progressed, the films became much more dark and adult-themed, as did the audience, so I think that was great. And but anyways, director Chris Columbus, Chris Columbus directed the first two Harry Potter films, but it was his daughter, Eleanor, who, by the way, fun fact, played Susan Bones in the first two films, who first introduced him to the book series. After refusing to read the books three times, he finally read them after Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban was released in 1999. As he read the story, he immediately envisioned the films. He eventually met with J.K. Rowling, and they instantly connected on their vision for the films. Number two, the floating candles in the Great Hall were real. I mean, that's crazy. While the Harry Potter films use a lot of CGI to bring the magic to life on screen, the floating candles in the Great Hall were one of the few exceptions. The cast revealed that the set designers used real burning candles in the Great Hall. Quote, "One of my favorite moments on set ever was the moment when all the floating candles started burning through their ropes that tie them to the ceiling and just started falling through the Great Hall," Daniel Radcliffe joked. So funny. I would have loved to be like, that seems like a liability though. It's like, what if the cast gets burned? Like, ow. Number three. Alan Rickman, knew Snape's backstory before anyone else. While discussing Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Gary Oldman, who played Sirius Black, noted he wished he had, quote, the whole picture of the story when they were filming. While Radcliffe admitted that he didn't know the ending himself, he said that the late Alan Rickman did. Quote, "He had the inside line," Radcliffe said. "He very, very early said to Joe, I think I need to know what happens here. As a result, it helped him portray the character a certain way throughout the films." Radcliffe added, quote, "Chris would literally say to him, why are you doing that? And Rickman would say, I'll tell you later." And I remember when Daniel was sharing this information with Gary Oldman was laughing hysterically because maybe Gary Oldman didn't do this for, maybe everybody on set knew that it is really funny because Alan Rickman was like, oh, I want to know what's going on. I want to have a little something, something over the rest of the cast, which I think served his character so beautifully because Snape, aside from Michael Gambon, who wasn't in it, by the way, Michael Gambon played Dumbledore 2.0 from The Prisoner of Azkaban on. They were my two favorites. I mean, they were so good at their characters. I mean, all the actors were really, really strong, but those two were, Michael Gambon was Dumbledore, and Alan Rickman was Snape. I mean, my other favorite Alan Rickman film is Love Actually, when he played Emma Thompson's husband, who, you know, cheats on her, and then Emma Thompson listens to that Nora Jones song in her room crying, and I think everybody's crying with her. And fun fact, Emma Thompson plays Trelawney, and she was magical, and they had amazing chemistry. But when I watched that film, I was like, Severus Snape, what are you doing in London in a different film at a different time in human clothes without your black hair and cloak? So iconic. But yeah, Alan was, I mean, and I think many people would agree that one of Alan's most incredible scenes in the entire franchise is this scene with Dumbledore and when Harry took his tears to the Pensieve in the Deathly Hallows Part 2 and the flashback and always. And that's actually how the 20th anniversary Return to Hogwarts ends, is Alan Rickman saying always. I get really, really emotional talking about Harry Potter because it is fantasy and it isn't real, but it is real because it really, really was my childhood. And I watch Harry Potter all the time. I'm an introvert. I like escapism. And during the pandemic, I watched Harry Potter a million times. I watched Lord of the Rings. And I mean, I watched 50 Shades of Grey, that trilogy, which is like not at all Harry Potter caliber, but like it's home for me. It's a real feeling of home. So Interesting. Okay, number four. I love this one. Emma Watson was, quote, in love with Tom Felton during filming. I mean, it makes sense because he's gorgeous, Tom Felton. And they also do a lot of social media posts together, which I love. Watson and Felton have always been open about their close friendship, and they revealed, even more about their close bond during the special. Watson revealed that she fell extra hard for Felton during one tutoring session where they were given the task of drawing what they thought God looked like. Quote, Tom had drawn a girl with a backward cap on a skateboard, and I don't know how to say it, but I just fell in love with him, she admitted. And I also said this in one of my TikToks that I posted, that Tom Felton was an early feminist. I mean, that's amazing. And he probably didn't even know what he was posting. Or he did, but I love that. Though Watson had a huge crush, their three-year age gap made Felton see her more as a little sister. Quote, I was very protective of her, he said. I've always had a soft spot for her, and that continues to this day. And while Watson noted that nothing has ever happened between them romantically, she added that they still, quote, love each other. Oh, I love it. They have incredible chemistry, and I would love to see them in a film together, like a rom-com or something great. I mean, I'm sure it's going to happen. It would be great. Number five, Daniel Radcliffe had a crush on Helena Bonham Carter. This was probably one of my favorite parts of the special, is when Helena and Daniel got back together, and Helena's laugh is infectious. I love Helena Bonham Carter. I mean, from Alice in Wonderland to The Crown to Harry Potter, to Cinderella, when she's the fairy godmother. She is, I mean, she's a true character actor. She's phenomenal. And I know she was in Fight Club. I know she has an amazing body of work. But to me, she's always going to be Bellatrix Lestrange. It seems Watson was the only person who had a crush on their Harry Potter co-star. In a sit-down between Radcliffe and Carter, the two discussed a sweet note Radcliffe gave her during filming. Radcliffe wrote about how it was a pleasure working with her, then ended the note by saying, quote, I do love you, and I just wish I had been born 10 years earlier. I might have had a chance. Oh, a Harry Potter, Bellatrix Lestrange relationship. I love that. I love Helena, though, and her fabulous hair. And she's very funny, you know? It's great. Number six, Daniel Radcliffe was handpicked by Chris Columbus to play Harry Potter. I mean, I think that the story of this has been told many a time, but I'll share it with you now. During the casting process, the filmmakers had a hard time finding the right young actor to play Harry Potter. That was until Chris Columbus saw Radcliffe in the BBC adaptation of David Copperfield. Quote, immediately a light bulb went off in my head, and he said, quote, this is Harry Potter. This is the kid we've been looking for months. While Columbus was sold on Radcliffe playing Harry Potter, Radcliffe's parents were not, since filming was originally supposed to take place in LA. They thought it would be, quote, a huge disruption to his life. Producer David Heyman eventually convinced Radcliffe's father to let him audition, and the rest is history. Yeah, I saw his audition. It's incredible. And, I mean, you see the chemistry testing between Dan, Emma, and Rupert, and it's amazing. I mean, they are it. Okay, number seven. This is one that I was actually really shocked by. Emma Watson almost left the franchise. Watson revealed that she almost left the Harry Potter franchise around the time The Order of the Phoenix started production due to stress from filming. Quote, people definitely forget what she took on and how gracefully she did it, Felton said. While Radcliffe and Grint had each other to lean on, and Felton had his, quote, cronies, Felton noted that Watson was all by herself. The fame thing had finally hit home in a big way, Watson said, adding that she felt very lonely during that period of her life. I'm really glad that she didn't, because I can't imagine anybody else playing Hermione Granger. I mean, I'm glad she stuck with it. And it's interesting, because from a franchise, there's always one actor that really, really has a massive career. I mean, we all know from Hunger Games is Jennifer Lawrence. And from Harry Potter, I mean, Dan works. He's on The Miracle Workers. Rupert works. But it's Emma. You know, she's really the star of post-Potter. Post-Potter. And I think many people loved her in Beauty and the Beast as well, but you may not. I mean, some people know this, but she was in that really, really great film, Sofia Coppola's The Bling Ring, you know, about the Bling Ring in LA, and she played this Valley Girl, and she's so good in that movie. It's a really underrated movie. I think it's going to be like a cult classic. It's going to be a cult classic down the line, but it was actually when I first moved to LA in 2013, I went to the movie theater at Universal Studios, and I saw it, and I was like, oh my gosh, Emma Watson, you are so good. And then, which even crazier, I'm going to tell the story before. I went to a taping of Ellen back in 2014 or something, and the guest, Ellen was hosting with Jason Sudeikis, and the guest that they hosted was Emma Watson, and I was like, this is so special because, you know, it's Emma Watson, and I'm a huge Harry Potter fan. So anyways, that's an interesting fact. Number eight, Jason Isaacs originally auditioned for Gilderoy Lockhart. Jason Isaacs, as you guys know, played Lucius Malfoy. So good, Lucius Malfoy. Isaacs is well known for playing Lucius Malfoy, but he originally auditioned for the part of Gilderoy Lockhart. In fact, he didn't want to play Lucius at all, but Gilderoy Lockhart went to the ever-so-talented What's his name? I have to Harry Potter. I'm sorry. He directed Cinderella with Lily James. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to pull it up right now. Gilderoy Lockhart was played by, Kenneth Branagh. He was so good. Oh, thank you, Google. Okay, Isaacs is, I already read that part. Quote, I was about to play Captain Hook and Peter Pan, and I thought, well, I don't want to play two children's villains, he admitted. At the request of Columbus, he said that he reluctantly read for Lucius with, quote, gritted teeth and was deeply bitter about the audition. Of course, his attitude during the audition ended up making him perfect. The perfect Lucius, and he eventually got the role. And then he said, thank God that I did that, because I'm doing the joy of a lifetime. Number 9, Daniel Radcliffe was starstruck over Gary Oldman, who obviously played Sirius Black. While discussing the notable actors who appeared in the Harry Potter films throughout the years, Radcliffe noted that Oldman was one of the first people he was truly, quote, in awe of when they first came to set. Quote, I remember you giving me the Gary chat, Watson recalled. You were like, listen, Emma, you need to be cool. This is Gary Oldman. It's a really big deal, which was really a projection on my own fears, Radcliffe added, because I was like, Dad, you need to be cool. This guy's a big deal. I mean, I didn't know who he was before, but I loved it. Number 10, director Mike Newell cracked a rib while filming The Goblet of Fire, which everybody knows. I mean, everybody in my life knows The Goblet of Fire is my favorite of the films, and it's because the film, I mean, Robert Pattinson's in it. It's the Yule Ball, and also Voldemort comes back. There's not really anything. Okay, number 11, Emma Watson and Rupert Grint were super nervous about their kissing scene, and this is in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, as we all know. They destroy a Horcrux, and in the Chamber of Secrets, and then they kiss, and it's magical. Ron and Hermione's kiss in the final movie was just as big of a deal for the fans as it was for Watson and Grint. Director David Yates joked that it was almost like, quote, prepping them for a major sports event. It didn't help their nerves that Radcliffe constantly teased them about the scene ahead of the time. Quote, I was like, I'm going to come on set and watch you guys kiss, Radcliffe recalled, who Watson added, Emma added, quote, everyone wanted to be on set for that kiss. Kissing Rupert is one of the hardest things I ever have to do, Watson said. It just felt wrong. So wrong on every level, because Dan, Rupert, and I are such siblings. And number 12, the last and final, notable thing from this. The cast members felt deeply interconnected with their characters when filming wrapped. As Harry Potter, I love that photo of them. It's a photo of them on the red carpet of the final premiere. As the Harry Potter film franchise came to a close, the cast admitted that it was a weird feeling parting with the characters that they had grown so much with them over the years. Quote, I feel like I lost track of who I was. And who the character was. I didn't really know where they ended or began, Grint said. Even my name didn't feel like my name. I felt like I only knew how to do one thing, how to play Ron. It was almost like we did the most extreme form of method acting. And there's many, many other iconic moments from this Harry Potter special, like talking about those who have passed, Tom Felton talking with Helena Bonham Carter, a lot of BTS footage, and then, I mean, everything with Ralph Fiennes, who played Lord Voldemort, and how he got the role, how he took it, how his sister was like, oh my god, you're gonna play Voldemort, you have to do it, you have to do it. I mean, to me, he is Voldemort, he was Voldemort, he's such a fine actor, though. So, sorry, just sniffled. It was really great, it was a really great thing to watch, and I just enjoyed it, and I highly, highly recommend downloading HBO Max if you don't and watching this, because it is truly special, so loved it. But this brings us to our second story of the day, which also has to do with the 20th anniversary special. This is from TMZ. J.K. Rowling cameos in Harry Potter reunion, trans controversy avoided. Okay, we all know what went down with J.K. Rowling and her Twitter and, ruffling some feathers, but I think a lot of fans were wondering whether or not she was going to be a part of this, and she was, but it was archive footage. Harry Potter and co. got together again for a trip down memory lane, and even though J.K. Rowling doesn't sit down for an interview herself, she still magically appears, kinda. The author and creator of the Wizarding franchise was notably absent from HBO Max's 20th anniversary Return to Hogwarts reunion special, which hit the airwaves Saturday, just in time for the new year, while J.K. Rowling did not appear in person to mingle with the rest of the cast and crew, including Dan, Emma, and Rupert. She was there in spirit, but more specifically there in old archival footage from a couple years ago. This is according to reports. Word is, clips from JK from 2019 are sprinkled into the nearly two-hour show where she talks about casting and the early process of turning her books into a blockbuster film. Apparently, some of the cast also talks about her, but they did it sparingly, but mostly gloss over her. If you're wondering what gives, this is sort of a backstory. It's no secret JK has become persona non grata in Hollywood of late due to comments she has made over the past year that many perceive as transphobic, remarks that she's tried clarifying time and time again, still Radcliffe disavowed her sentiments, drawing a firm line in the sand where she stands on the trans, where he stands on the trans community. Then there's a tweet here, JK Rowling tweeted, people who menstruate, I'm sure there used to be a word for those people. Someone help me out. Wombin, wimpound, wombud. Okay, I don't even know what that means. But now with that in mind, it's perhaps no surprise that Rowling isn't in the HBO special, but weirdly enough, there are slightly differing takes on why she wasn't involved, including a report claiming she herself turned down the opportunity. E! Entertainment Weekly cites sources saying JK was extended an invite by HBO Brass, but that she and her team felt the old footage of her would be adequate. Even more puzzling, these same sources say her transgender controversy played no part in the decision to pass on joining. HBO Max, meanwhile, confirms they reached out to Rowling, but wound up agreeing that her old clips would suffice. It's unclear on their end if she turned them down for a new interview or if they actually shot something with her and then ultimately scrapped it. Anyway, if you're wondering what JK was up to for the new year, it looks like she was dabbling in enchanting settings with four, like, company to boot. Expecto Patronum. Yeah, I mean, I was wondering this too, and I think the archival footage served its purpose, and it was great, and it did its job, and of course they weren't going to address it, what she said, and it is what it is. So I thought that it was done very tastefully, all things given. Okay, third story of the day. The final stories of our episode today are pop culture stories. E! News. Britney Spears unfollows her sister Jamie Lynn Spears on Instagram. I mean, the never-ending saga of Britney Spears and everything going down with her family, which she has every right to be upset about. Now that she's living her free life, she can unfollow and follow who she wishes. Follow me no more, Britney Spears says. Pop star is starting 2022 as a free woman, and included in her fresh start is an Instagram cleanse. Britney recently unfollowed her estranged sister Jamie Lynn Spears. E! News has confirmed as of Sunday, January 2nd, that Zoe 101 alum still follows Piece of Me singer. The move comes amid an ongoing rift between the siblings that came to light in 2021 in the final months of Britney's legal battle to end her conservatorship, which was terminated after 13 years in November. Last year, the toxic singer spoke out, against her family members, including Jamie Lynn and her mom, Lynn, and her dad, Jamie, which we all know about. I think Britney doesn't want to. I do too. You know, you unfollow people whose content you just don't want to see. And if they're bothering you or pissing you off, then you don't have to follow them. We live in a free country. And, you know, I'm sure obviously it's different because Britney's so famous and it's a family thing. And people are obviously going to read into this the way they are, just as, you know, it's why I'm talking about this, why I'm reading this article. But she's every right to do that. And I'm glad, you know, she's doing what she wants to do. Let the girl live. Let the girl live. So, yeah. But I wonder if she's actually going to address it, like, verbally and talk about it. We shall see. This brings us to our fourth and final story of the day. This was also a New Year's Eve special, which I'm really excited about. Hulu's The Kardashians teaser trailer drops on New Year's Eve. Finally, we're getting something. We're getting the bare minimum, though. We didn't even get a date. We just got a sort of a teaser. The first family of reality television is back in 2022. Hulu dropped the first teaser trailer for The Kardashians on New Year's Eve, revealing very little information about the upcoming reality series. Quote, when the countdown to the New Year's ends, the countdown to the new show begins. Text throughout the video reads, before we finally see the stars themselves, Khloe Kardashian, Kendall Jenner, Kim, Kris, Kourtney, and Kylie appear on screen simultaneously, all of whom were wearing different shades of neutral colors. Quote, Happy New Year, everybody, they all say while looking directly in the camera. Though the teaser is only 15 seconds long, there are a few things worth noting. For starters, Kim, 41, and Kris, 66, are not only in front and center for the short clip, but also appear to have filmed their quickie shot together while the rest of the cast worked solo. By the way, these girls all look great, and it's great to see Kylie holding her baby bump. It's great to see Kourtney there, because I know Kourtney didn't want to do Keeping Up anymore. She wanted to live her best life, but I'm really, really happy Kourtney's part, because I think Kourtney's so entertaining. She's great television. I love seeing beautiful Kendall. I love seeing gorgeous Chloe, and of course the stars themselves, Kim and Kris. This is gonna be a great show. Kylie 24 is cradling her pregnant belly. Kourtney 42 is definitely back. She's probably gonna pay a lot of money. There's just been so much going on with the family. I mean, the Travis of it all, the Tristan Thompson of it all, everything. I mean, I'm very much looking forward to the show, and I think Hulu is a great platform for them. I mean, I think many people were like, I wonder if they're going to go HBO or Netflix, because Netflix has so much money, but Disney too also has a lot of money. Disney, Hulu's under the Disney umbrella, so very, very interesting. And I'm really looking forward to this new chapter with my girls, with our girls. So yeah, really exciting stuff coming up, you guys. And that's our money episode. That's the first work week episode back, and lots to talk about, but I'm really, really excited. So yeah, thank you so much, as always, for joining me, for tuning in to Start Your Work Week. I'm Andrew Devitri, the mistress of pop culture, here to deliver you pop culture fun stories. Sometimes I usually dip into politics, but very rarely, mostly during election season, which we are going to have another one very, very soon, so brace yourselves. But aside from that, have a fabulous day. You can stream my podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Castbox Radio, iTunes, the podcast app on the iPhone, basically any podcast platform or whatever that you have. I'm there. And I'll be back with you guys tomorrow. Bye.